Hello, welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas. I may be physically alone, but I tell you what, we're virtually going to change that throughout the programme. Gab Marcotti, Julien Laurent, Sid Lowe, Frank Leboeuf, Hercules Gomez and Sebastian Salazar will all be joining us. Of course, the coronavirus has hit Italy especially hard. The front page of Corriere dello Sport, game over. An interesting quote coming from the Brescia president saying, how can we be sitting here talking about the Serie A title when we have a plague on our doorstep? I couldn't care less about football right now. We cannot play again this season. We played two-thirds of the season, one-third is missing. The season is over. It's very simple. We scrapped a third of the season, so we cut a third off the player wages, a third off the TV rights, and a third off the taxes. It's the easiest way to fix everything. I want to welcome Gab Marcotti to the show. Gab, is this a sentiment that others are saying?
I think depending on your viewpoint, if you're an owner, you like the idea of lopping a third off of the wages. If you're a broadcaster who's paying for games that aren't going to be shown, you like the idea of lopping a third off the TV rights. I mean, I think the problem is that there's a lot of different interested parties right now. And, these kinds of public pronouncements probably aren't very helpful. You need people to sit around and figure out what can we do, if anything, what can we do it. They move the Euros to create a window, which may or may not be sufficient to help finish the season. But I think you have to give it a go. You have to see which way the pandemic goes and see where you are.
Of course, Italy being hit extremely hard by the coronavirus. More updates coming in. Dybala now has the virus. The Maldinis have it as well. Now, Lazio have officially announced that they will not be returning to squad training today. That's despite having set March 23rd as their return date. And Napoli, as of now, still planning to train on Wednesday, Gab. That can't be realistic.
No, I don't think it is realistic, and I think it's one of those situations where, you know, there's a lot of issues going on with Napoli. As you know, there's a dispute with the president, De Laurentiis, having taken legal action for stuff that went on what seems like several lifetimes ago, but when Carlo Ancelotti was still there back in November, I think it was. I think you're seeing clubs going through certain legal posturings. I don't think it's going to happen. And by the way, regarding the Maldinis, father and son, both of them were diagnosed with the coronavirus. Both of them have been fully healed now.
It is such a fluid situation, isn't it? As you mentioned before, it seems strange for anyone to be setting any sort of deadlines or return dates as of now.
It is a fluid situation. And look, I think the reality is, to some degree, you have to put some sort of deadline, some sort of a point of no return where you say, okay, or at least where you play the scenario game, right? Where you say, all right, if by this day we haven't started playing, what are we going to do? Some leagues, as we discussed the other day, like the Premier League, say that, you know, come what may, they want to finish the season. They may have to revisit that. They may not have to revisit that. UEFA has taken a different line and said, if we can wrap things up by June 30th, we will wrap things up by June 30th. I think a lot of leagues are taking that tack. But the thing to remember here, and I write about it in my musings column today on the site, is that there's so many things that we still don't know. Not just in terms of when we're going to go back to play, if at all, but also what the actual economic damage is going to be, what the implications of that are, what the potential health implications are for coming back behind closed doors, as certainly has been suggested by many, and may end up being necessary in a number of leagues if they want to wrap this up. So I think this is what's scaring a lot of people, is that, you know, not just the pandemic, but also there's so many different paths, potentially, if we do get the good news, of how we can get out of it. And I think people can't wrap their heads around, you know, what is the right way to go. What we need is people getting together, drawing up scenarios, depending on the pandemic, and finding a solution that makes sense. And what makes sense for one league might not make sense for another league.
Gamal Cordy, thank you very much. Of course, we're starting the show every day throughout the week, bring you up to date with all the latest regarding coronavirus and how it is affecting football. Be sure to join us tomorrow for more. Be sure to go over to the website, check out Sid's article about how La Liga players are trying to help during the coronavirus. We're joined by Sid now. Sid, it was made official today what the lockdown will continue in Spain till April 13th. How is everyone coping in general, day to day?
That's a very good question. I suppose everybody's different, but I think there is a sense of kind of settling into a routine now, accepting the reality of the situation. I think increasingly, even those people who were continuing to try and go to work, who were going out on the grounds that what they were doing was essential, I think that some of those people are starting to stay at home now. The government is going to, I think, try and reduce some of the rights that certain businesses have to continue if they're not essential services. But I think really it's kind of getting used to the idea that this will go on for a very long time. As you probably know, at the weekend, the state of alarm, which was initially open for 2 weeks, will go on for at least another 2 weeks. So we will be in this kind of lockdown scenario at least now until April the 11th. And of course, everybody hopes that that will be the end of it. But I think we're now all in a mindset that we know that it's possible that that will be extended again, and that even on April the 11th, this will continue.
When we last spoke, Sid, we talked about the possibility of getting everything done regarding La Liga by June the 30th. That looks less and less likely as days pass. What implications does it have if they can't get everything settled by then?
Well, look, obviously it has a lot of implications on a lot of different levels. I mean, seen purely from the point of view of the competition itself, it raises the possibility that this season gets declared null and void, or it raises the possibility that this season gets declared to have been finished, and therefore some sort of decision needs to be made about who the league title winners are, which teams go into the Champions League, which teams go into the Europa League, which teams are relegated, which teams indeed come up from the second division, and so on. That has lots and lots of knock-on effects. In terms of specifically that target of trying to reach the 30th of June, that of course was about the fact that most players' contractual cycles end on the 30th of June, and new contracts start, or a new year of a contract starts, on the 1st of July. And so of course there was a logistical reason to try and have that as a cut-off point. But today's announcement essentially really is just a public pronouncement of something that we already knew that was the case, which was this is in the hands of the virus now, so we just don't know. But yes, if the season was forced to run into the summer beyond the 30th of June, then there would need to be all sorts of agreements reached about what happens with players' contracts, what the labour implications are in terms of their relationships with their employers, who obviously are the clubs.
Meanwhile, the front page of Marca and AS, no surprise, dominated by the news that former Real Madrid president Lorenzo Sanz passed this weekend. Marca going with goodbye to the president who brought the European Cup back to Madrid. AS, the man of the seventh, of course, very significant when it comes to the history of Real Madrid and how he'll be remembered, Sid.
Yeah, that's the focal point of the immense majority of everything that's been said since he passed away. I think it's very difficult to properly overstate just how significant that seventh European Cup was. Now, a lot of our viewers will have seen, of course, how significant it was for Real Madrid to finally win the 10th European Cup. They've been waiting for 12 years. There's that Sergio Ramos goal. There was a real pressure and obsession about winning that trophy again. And as I just said, that was 12 years. It was 32 years between winning the 6th European Cup and the 7th European Cup at Real Madrid. It was seen as very much a different era. The joke from Barcelona fans was always that Real Madrid had never won a European Cup in colour. The pressure was intense. The obsession was absolute. This is a club that forged its entire identity through the European Cup. So winning it at last in Amsterdam against Juventus in 1998 was absolutely colossal. And that, of course, has been the focal point because Lorenzo Sanz, who was president for only 5 years, but in those 5 years won two European Cups, including this one, which they waited for longer than anything else.
Sid Lowe, as always, thank you very much for your thoughts from Spain. Be sure to stay safe for a lot more on Lorenzo Sanz. Of course, as Sid mentioned, the man who brought the European Cup back to Real Madrid for that all-important seventh title. The man remembered fondly throughout Real Madrid supporters.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name? Check. Birthday? Social security? Is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my social security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Now, over on ESPNFC.com, Moises Lorenz and Sam Marsden have come together to put together this article about the possibility of Neymar leaving in the summer because of Article 17, which apparently, Gab Marcotti, gives players the possibility to tear up their contract after 3 years. Any chance of this?
All right, so I'll give you a little quick canned background to Article 17. I mean, Barcelona would be going way old school if they tried this. It was introduced some 15 to 20 years ago after the players' union sort of complained. It took legal action saying, well, wait, why is it that in a normal job, you know, you can just quit your job and go work for somebody else? Why can't footballers do this? So they come up with this compromise, which is Article 17, which says that if you're of a certain age, after you've been at a club for 3 years, you can simply quit your job, rescind your contract, and go play for somebody else. And the only thing you got to do is you have to pay some level of compensation. Now, the problem is they never quite fixed the level of compensation. So early on, some people used this method. The first major case was a Scottish footballer named Andy Webster, no doubt a mate of Craig Burley's. The problem that they ran into afterwards is that when they fixed the compensation would get fixed, but there was no real guideline to it. So what they found is they went on, and there was a famous case involving Methusalem where, in the end, the compensation to be paid was more than his market value. It was sort of some insane figure. So the difficulties in agreeing the right amount of compensation to be paid, remember, this has to go to tribunals, and then it has to often goes to CAS, coupled with the fact that in many cases the player has to sit out a certain amount of time while his case gets heard and while the compensation gets agreed. The upshot of that is that basically nobody used Article 17 anymore to go and try to get deals done. We haven't seen this in a very long time. Now, as the article itself states, it's going to be difficult. A lot of times it's used as a threat to get the other side to negotiate something mutually beneficial. It's an interesting approach. I'm skeptical that they can do it, but you know, you assume that Barcelona have gone and done their homework here.
Gab, thank you very much. By the way, a brand new Gab and Jules podcast available over on the website now. Mark Ogden joins them as a special guest. We're joined now by very much the quieter half of that podcast. Julien Laurent is with us. Gab somewhat poo-pooed the idea of Article 17 having any effect in the future when it comes to Neymar. Jules, are they taking this at all seriously in Paris?
I mean, I don't know if many people in Paris know about Gab Marcotti. I mean, I'm sure they know of him, but if they talk to him about it, but I think he was right on this one. They know it's a possibility, and yes, Barcelona could do that, and they have lawyers for it, and even in the Neymar camp, they could do that if they want, but they don't really think he would go that far. Like we've said before, PSG were open for negotiation last summer, and if Neymar wants to go again this summer and to Barcelona, I think they would be open for negotiation too. The only thing is, one, they're not really sure that Neymar really wants to go anymore, to leave the club, because he seems quite happy now as it is. And two, also they think that even if Barcelona go to FIFA for Article 17, they don't really think that the price tag, the transfer fee that FIFA will ask for, will be very far from what PSG want anyway. Let's not forget, they paid €222 million for Neymar less than 3 years ago now, and he still has 2 years more on his contract. That's why Article 17 can come to force in this case. And they think that probably FIFA will ask or put a price tag between €150 and €170 million, which is what PSG would ask for anyway. So there's not really any need, I think, for Barcelona, if they really want Neymar, to go there, because PSG would probably, one, be okay to negotiate and see if they can get a deal done like they did last summer. And two, the price tag would probably be similar to what PSG would want in the first place anyway. So I don't think they will need to go that far and go for Article 17.
Jules, you mentioned the fact that Neymar's happier now in PSG. You can't say that just after one game. Let's not forget, after the first leg against Borussia Dortmund, he was moaning about the way he was treated when he was injured and all that. Just because you have one win in the second leg of the Champions League, that doesn't suddenly make everything rosy, does it?
No, you're right. You're right. Although they won that second leg and they are through to the quarterfinals, whenever that's going to be played and whoever against. But I think his happiness, or his newly happiness, if you want, came even before that game. Yes, there was a bit of tension before the first leg against Dortmund because he hasn't been playing for a while and he had a little injury and everything. But even before that, he seemed happier. He was happier at the club, in his private life in Paris to start with, but also as a club, in his relationship with Tuchel, in his relationship with Kylian Mbappe as well. And certainly we saw in his own celebrations after the win against Dortmund in the second leg what that meant to him. Let's not forget again that in the last two seasons he could not play the Champions League last 16 second leg, because of injuries. This time he's not injured. He's playing well. He was decisive in that second leg against Dortmund. And on that level, a lot of things have changed. Yeah, okay, maybe he will want to go back to Barcelona. Maybe he still believed that he was happier in Catalonia than he is in Paris. But you see different attitude and different atmosphere around Neymar this time around than the last two seasons.
Jules, is it just selfish? You know, if he goes to Barcelona, you won't be invited to his party next year.
You don't know. I might still be. You don't know. I just think that, and I think he feels that as well. The first two seasons, he got injured in January and in February and couldn't really be part of the second half of the season in each way. I think he feels right now this is different because he's not injured, because he can, although with the virus and everything, again, it's not a normal season for him, but at least he's fully fit. And whenever we go on the other side of this, whenever this is all sorted and football can come back, I think he will feel in a much stronger position. And I think he wanted that. He wanted a full season in Paris, albeit this one is a bit different, as we said. But I just don't think his story with PSG is completely coming to an end. Whatever happened towards now and the end of the season, wherever that is, I think there might be another season in him in Paris.
Juliana Ron, as always, thank you very much. To keep up to date with all the latest goings on, be sure to go over to the website and check out our Transfer Talk page. Meanwhile, the president of Saint-Étienne in France came out and said, we cannot play until the curve is reversed. That is to say, in July, August, at best on June the 15th. It's necessary to finish the championship at all costs, even if it means ending it in July or August and resuming in stride. Frank Leboeuf joins us. Frank, June the 15th?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, we have a new scientist, not even a scientist, better than that, a genius. Mr. Caiazzo knows better than any scientist in the world. Well, nobody knows when we're going to reach the peak, when it's going to start to hopefully decrease. And that guy is saying that he knows when we're going to start playing football. So, of course, it's a nonsense. Of course, nobody knows when we're going to start thinking about playing again. Hopefully soon, but we didn't reach the peak. I think it's going to be like within 2-3 days. Then maybe, hopefully, the virus and the problem with the people will start decreasing, and then the athlete will start running, and then they're going to start playing. So maybe it's going to be before, maybe it's going to be after, but Mr. Caiazzo has no clue when it's going to happen, and nobody knows. And the president of the League One, I guess, is very upset with that situation, because Mr. Caiazzo is just the chairman of Saint-Etienne. It's not the spokesman of the League One.
Frank, what's your day-to-day like in Paris at the moment?
Well, I wake up pretty late because I'm getting lazy and I don't know what to do. So I try to stay in my bed quite late, and then I get a big breakfast, and then I do crosswords with my wife. I read a book, and I clean my scooter, my car for the 10th time, I think. And then I do some some squat and try to exercise for an hour every day, and with stretching and some yoga. And then we think about eating and watch a movie. We try to not watch TV too much, like 2-3 hours per day at the max. And that's it. That's quite boring, but it is what it is, and it is what we need to do to make sure that the virus won't go from somebody to another person, and everybody gets sicker. So it's boring, but it has to be done like that.
Yeah, well said, Frank. It's something we all have to do at the moment. Frank Leboeuf, thank you very much. Just a reminder, Extra Time, as always, available on our YouTube channel. Some really good questions that Frank will answer. Be sure to check it out. Plenty of content over on our YouTube channel. It's always entertaining to see when Herc and Seb and Ali get together. You can go through the archives there. No Ali, but let's join, shall we? Herc and Seb now.
All right, thanks, Dan. Herc, stop me if you've heard this before. We have some interesting comments to dissect out of Mexico, and they're actually coming from a couple former managers of the Mexican national team. Let's go in sequential order here. We'll start with Javier Aguirre. Here's what he had to say. No nos ve nadie. Nobody sees us in Mexico, says Aguirre. He says in Europe, people watch MLS more than Liga MX. He says they see Libertadores and not the CONCACAF Champions League. Of course, Aguirre coaching right now with Leganés in Spain. Hugo Sanchez jumped on this bandwagon as well, our colleague at ESPN. Here's what he had to say, quote, sadly, in the Mexican League, we don't have visionary leaders like they do in England and Spain in promoting their tournaments. It would mean the games from Mexico could be seen in other powerful countries in the world. Instead, the U.S. are smart and do it better than us. Okay, Herc, let's kind of attack this from a player perspective. The race between Liga MX and MLS is always on. But if you were a player and you were trying to get to Europe and you were thinking as global reach as part of that equation, where would it be better for you to be playing, Liga MX or Major League Soccer?
Better to be playing? That depends on the club. It really does. It doesn't really depend on the league. But more exposure to what is Europe? Well, that's Major League Soccer. And I was actually on that phone interview with Javier Aguirre for Fútbol Picante. And when he said that, it was kind of a collective, well, here we go again. I mean, they're telling us more of the same. Rodolfo Pizarro said it, that it's easier for him to get to Europe from what is Major League Soccer than his time in Pachuca, in Chivas, in Monterrey. And part of that really isn't so much the exposure on his part, but the crazy amount or the crazy transfer fee they put on these Mexican players. They put on these stars in Liga MX. People need to realize, and especially down south, that if you're a European fan, European player, a European ownership group, whatever they may be, Mexico is more exotic than Major League Soccer. Liga MX is just as or even more exotic because of what is the country. I mean, most players, the appeal of living in the United States and in a league like Major League Soccer that's up and coming, that is all of a sudden taking on a mindset of selling these players. And to sell these players in the world market, well, you need to be competitive with the actual sell price of these players. And that's what the Liga MX just won't come to grips with. For whatever reason, they overvalue these stars and these clubs in Europe, whether it be La Liga or whether it be the Bundesliga or Serie A. They don't want to deal with these price tags.
Herc, I wonder if you've ever heard of the International Federation of Football History and Statistics. They go by IFFHS. They did a ranking of leagues across the world this past year. It came out in January.
You know I've heard of that, Seb. You know I've heard of that.
I know, and you can tell why in a bit. Liga MX was ranked 21st in this study. Major League Soccer way down at 66. Quick math here. How does playing in a league 45 spots beneath Liga MX better prepare a player to get to Europe?
Quick stats here. That same organization, when you're naming me one of the top 10 goal scorers in the world. So your argument is defunct. I don't know what else to tell you. Yeah, you know, take that with a grain of salt. That statistic
hey,
just threw out there.
Is better. We agree 1 year there, right?
Yeah, but that's not the argument. I mean, if you're looking at it as a whole, then yeah. But if you look at what you're actually trying to say is what's more recognizable, I think if you, in terms of the attention, the visibility, the reach, the actual, how can I say this, a player actually wanting to go play there? Like, how many Gignans does Liga MX have? You know, how many of these players from Europe actually come down south and want to make a career out of it? It's not as appealing as living in the United States or Canada. It's just the truth. It doesn't mean that one league is better than the other. It just means it's more visible and it's more of a viable option to these big European players, or ownership groups, or people who are willing to actually do business with said league.
It's not just the coaches that are speaking about this, Herc. Rafa Marquez mentioned MLS being a more attractive league than the Mexican league. As all of these people kind of pile onto this same sentiment, is Liga MX in trouble?
Of course they're in trouble, Seb. Of course they're in trouble. They're in trouble because this is direct competition. Listen, forget about Major League Soccer wanting to be one of the best leagues in the world. They need to concentrate on Liga MX. And this is the reason this relationship between the two keeps growing stronger and stronger and stronger. And before Liga MX actually realizes it, because it's the United States, because it's Canada, because these are attractive locations for, or destinations, I should say, for these players and their families to actually live in, that's one thing that they can't compare. That's one thing that Liga MX can't compete with. Now, if you're talking about money, if you're talking about competition, if you're talking about play, you know, level of play, all that stuff, yes, they can compete with. But you can't compete with the luxury of living in the United States or Canada and have the commodity of not worrying about safety for your friends or family and all that other all those other decisions that come with, you know, making the decision of where you want to be and where you want to raise your family.
I heard that's all the time that we've got for this today. Always a pleasure to speak with you. For those of you who want more Herc, I know nobody wants more of me. You can check us out on the ESPN FC YouTube page. We're always talking MLS, Liga MX, and everything else with Alejandro Moreno. That's all the time we've got for now. Dan, back to you.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
With thousands of locally owned Napa stores across the nation, chances are that wherever you call home, we do too. So as America starts opening back up for business, and as more of us start getting back out there again, we'll be in big cities, small towns, and everywhere in between, doing what we've always done to help keep our local communities moving forward. So whether you stop by a Napa Auto Parts store, Auto Care Center, or visit us at Napa Online, you can count on Napa know-how.
Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you to everyone who has been on. Who've we had? Gab, Jules, Frank, Sid, Herc, and Sebastian. Thank you very much for joining us. Stay tuned, though, as Frank LaBeouf is back with me to answer some of your questions for Extra Time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. It's just me and Frank LaBeouf today. What a beautiful moment. Tête-à-tête, Frank. Let's start off, shall we, with the first tweet. Brazilians are known for their art and flair. Italians for their defence. What would you say is the defining trait of French football?
I guess we don't. We have a little bit of everything. You know, where we pick from others. I remember with the 84 team when they won the European Championship with Platini, they were called the Little Brazilian. So we don't have something specific, let's say. But, maybe the way to steal some talent from others and to say it's ours. Maybe we're good at that.
Like a hybrid of the best, Frank. Right then, which Arsenal players did Frank dread playing against?
Well, definitely Thierry Henry. The guy was a monster. He was so fast. When he was coming towards me, I was starting to run backwards to make sure that I wouldn't be overtaken too easily. And on top of it, he was a teammate for the national team. So I didn't want to tackle him and injure him. So it was very complicated. We didn't care. He wanted to humiliate me, so it was always hard playing against him. But what a fantastic player.
Frank, is it fair to say that he's probably more loved in England than he is in France?
Yes, it is fair. It is fair because he made some comments and maybe was misunderstood, and there was the game against Northern Ireland when Gallas scored the goal and Thierry made the handball. So yeah, there is a controversy about him and the way he behaves when he talks. He's a fantastic guy, but I guess misunderstood. And yes, much loved in England and in France. So.
Where are you loved more, in England or in France or in California, Frank?
At my house. My wife loves me, well, I hope so.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Well, no, it's okay. I think in California, I'm completely unknown. So, I think in Bristol, some people love me, not you, but some others. In England, yeah, people like me, not everywhere. But they like me, and I'm always welcome in Chelsea and west of London. And yeah, in France, it's okay. People are nice to me. They just say hi. They're not crazy about me, but they're nice to me.
Okay, good. Frank, just going back to Thierry Henry, why are people angry about his handball? I understand if you're Irish, obviously you resent him for it, but if you're France, he did it for the benefit of the side.
Well, you know, it's hard to explain and it's hard to understand as well for me. And I think it's Keane, the former Manchester United player, said, well, you know, it can happen, you know, sometimes in football you have to accept that you can lose even if it's a referee mistake. But in France, I don't know, we love so much to criticize that we can even criticize ourselves. And we qualified, but some people found that it wasn't fair enough. So we should have replayed the game or play again the game. I don't know. I don't understand that. You know, I think it was a reflex from Thierry Henry. He didn't do it on purpose. He apologized for that. but maybe he did too much to stay on the field with the Northern Ireland players. No, he should have gone to the dressing room. Maybe it's what French people didn't accept. Maybe.
That was, of course, against the Republic of Ireland. Frank, who was the best German player you ever played against?
Oh, I played against so many. But I think the one that I appreciate the most was definitely Oliver Kahn. The guy was a monster. Never smiled, always fighting. Remember Sepp Maier in the 70s. It was for him like his son in the same position. I really like him. And we played against Germany at the Stade de France and we won 1-0. And after the game, Fabien Barthez was named just before the best goalkeeper in the world. And I went to see him and I said, you know, Fabien is a fantastic player, fantastic goalkeeper. But I think you are really at the same level. That guy was simply fantastic and a monster. He could have killed anybody.
How was playing against the greatest Olympic Lyonnais player, Juninho, when you're at Marseille, Frank?
Well, Juni is a friend of mine, and we worked during the World Cup
Juni
in France. And Juni. We say Juni, yeah, because he's a friend. Sorry, and a fantastic person first, of course, a fantastic player, a fantastic free kicker. And I played like 2 years when he first came to France, 2 years against him. It's the guy you want to have in your team because you know that if you struggle somewhere, he's going to do something special and he's going to make you win and make Marseille lose when I was playing against. So, very fond of that player, very fond of that person, and happy that he's back to France and hopefully he's going to help Lyon very well.
When you think about free kick takers, you think David Beckham, Cristiano Ronaldo, but Juninho, you look at the stats, he was better than all of them, wasn't he, Frank? He was exceptional.
Yeah, he was exceptional in the way that he created something special. That he was hitting the ball halfway, and the ball was going very just above the wall and going down straight after. And like Ronaldo does, like David Luiz is capable of. David Beckham had another technique, but Juninho, I think, was the first to kick free kicks like that way. And that was absolutely fantastic to seeing him doing it. Great free kicker. The best, for me, the best.
Right, let's see. What else we got here, Frank? Wait, my phone's locked. Wait, stay with me. Right, here we go. Since his last name means beef, what's his favorite cut of steak?
We call it entrecote in France. I think it's a sirloin in English. I like a little bit of fat because it gives a taste of the beef. But I love the meat. Mm. I'm sorry for the vegans, but I really love the beef. And I'm sorry to eat my family.
And like, obviously, Steve Nichol, you like your meat well done.
No, of course not. That's horrible. the meat should be rare. That's the best way to eat meat. No. But my wife eats it overcooked, which is a big scandal, even bigger than Steve Nichols.
I bet it is. My goodness. Yeah. Thank you very much, Frank. That brings us to the end of Extra Time. As always, great to hear from you. Thank you for your tweets. Keep them coming in. It's great to hear from you as well. ESPN FC returns to your screens tomorrow.